Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Welcome back. This is Inside Boxing Live, and we're presented by PPV.com. I am Dan Canobio. He is Chris Algieri. He won a world title at 140 pounds and had several big fights in his career. Now he's a media pundit. For anyone that is now joining for the first time, we welcome you into Inside Boxing Live. Like and subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review. We do it once or twice a week, depending on Chris's availability, because in addition to being a media pundit, he's also a fight stunt coordinator for a big boxing movie. Wow.
Dan, I love how you blame me for us going to once a week. Meanwhile, you're gallivanting around the Montauk, having fun in the Hamptons, going on vacation. Dan's been on a lot more vacations than I have, for the record.
One.
For the record.
One.
Yeah, that's
one.
A lot more than me.
Between the two of us, we work hard. That's one vacation, yeah. That was in the summer. Going to Montreal for an MVP show at the end of the week. You have your...
That's work, Dan. That's not vacation. That's work.
I'm looking at it as somewhat of a vacation because I have never seen Montreal. Ariel Helwani. Cool. That's what I've heard. Ariel Helwani is working the show. He's from there. So
excellent.
I think he'll be showing me around. If anyone has any suggestions.
He's a Canuck. I didn't know that. That makes sense.
Montreal.
Some of the nicest people in the world. And Ariel's a really nice guy.
Generally nice guy. This episode is brought to you by PPV.com, our proud presenting sponsor. October 25th, Fundora versus Keith Thurman will be streaming live on PPV.com. We will be there in some capacity. We'll be offering a live interactive chat and all that good stuff and coverage and all of that. I've heard some rumblings about Dan Rayfield just reported that Pitbull Cruz versus Lamont Roach could end up as a Amazon PPV either December 6th or December 20th. So there's a lot of fights coming up on the upcoming boxing schedule, and PPV.com is your place to watch a lot of these fights. No subscriptions. Stream it to any device, even your phone. Crystal clear. I remember Chris watched on an aeroplane once. He watched a PPV stream.
That's technically not allowed, but I did.
Why? You think the plane's going to blow up?
No, not even that. Like, I just don't think you're allowed to do that. Like, I don't know. I'm pretty sure I was told that literally on the flight. And I was like, whatever, dude. I'm riding dirty. I'm flying.
You can watch Netflix on your phone.
Can you? I don't think it works. Can you watch it?
Oh, heck yeah, bro. You go to the Netflix app before you take off. You download.
I watch a live event streaming on PPV. Like, you can't do that on any other streaming app platform.
Oh, I thought you meant technically it would, when they say shut down your electronics, we're about to land. Like, I'm sure, my cell phone's gonna make the plane crash.
Maybe, but also, dude, have you ever watched any live event that wasn't streamed through the TV? No, that's my whole point. It's like, there's no way you can do that.
That's how good PPV.com stream is. Yeah. Strong ass stream. This episode, we have something special planned for you guys. There's a lot of myths in boxing, and we're gonna bust them. We did this episode a few years ago, and the show has only gotten bigger and bigger and bigger to the number one boxing podcast in the entire universe. So why not reintroduce some boxing myths, reintroduce this format? So let's get it started, Chris. A lot of myths in
boxing. Dan, I'm looking forward to this because I know you've come up with some. Guys, we have not talked about what he's asking me prior to this or what kind of myths are out there. He hasn't even picked my brain about it, so this is all going to be fresh from the dome.
That's how we roll. No prep. I also got a lot from Twitter. I put out one of the biggest myths in boxing, so a lot of our Twitter followers, listeners, offered some of theirs, so I did pick some from there, some really good ones. I offered some of my own. We started off with a bang, quite literally with a bang. Myth number one, fighters must abstain from sex during training camp.
Must? No. Should? Yes. And the reason behind this is, I mean, for one... They, the old saying, women weaken knees. And it's not so much the act. it's the chasing them around. Because if you listen, if you have, if you're married, if you have a long-term lady, that's a different thing. But like, if you're out and about trying to find some new women out there, that means you got to be out at night. That means you got to be maybe around drinks. That means you got to be up late dancing. And you got these ladies, you gotta swoon them a little bit. And that's not good for the legs. That's not good for recovery. If you're training all day and then you go out and you're on the dance floor and you're hanging out with girls and you're going from one bar to the next bar. Oh, and then you have a little beer here. And then you have a little cocktail here. And then you have a little vodka soda, but it's light. It's vodka soda. Nah, man, that's not good for the legs. That's not good for training. But in terms of the actual act itself, I always abstained a few weeks. And the reason for that was more mental than anything. I don't think physically it has an effect. It's not really going to, if anything, it would probably improve your testosterone to you know, have sex with multiple women all around the world. Now, but in terms of me being in a bad mood, it aided me mentally and psychologically to not, and even less than just even the actual act is, it was more about being around a woman in a tender fashion. I didn't want hugs. I didn't want to hold hands. I didn't want any. Don't caress
a tender
nothing.
Fashion.
Don't caress my face. My mother used to hate when I would fight because, you know, I get tough and hard and didn't want to get touched. You know, my mom would give me a hug and a kiss. And I'm just, you know, I just, not that I wouldn't ever stop my mom from, you know, doing that. I would never hold her up, but I would, you know, I would just be a little stiff.
I'd be on edge. Women weaken legs. Women, three words. Women weaken legs has such a
women weaken knees. Women weaken knees
has such a deep meaning because you just named three separate reasons why. Like, they weaken them from the physical act of having sex if you're using your legs. They weaken them by out there chasing them in the streets. They women them. They weaken them by the
by making
touch,
you soft.
Softening,
by making
softening
you
up. Gervonta Tank Davis said it to me himself. I don't want to go see a therapist because I feel like it would weaken me. You fighters have to have that edge. So even your mother coming up to you, giving you a hug. No, not now, Mom. I have to be tough. I have to be strong.
Fight. I love
but
you.
Here's the thing about the first part you said about heading out into the streets and legitimately courting a woman, which I feel like is a lost art these days. Like, you can't approach women because they think that you're like, I don't know. It's just a weird time in life right now. With apps. Dating apps.
Yeah, like, so I missed the app era, so I don't know anything about that.
If you're a professional fighter and you just pop up, open a dating app, I mean, it's cutting you to do it from your couch. Then you're cutting out the whole aspect of getting in your car, going out, being out till 2-3 in the morning.
Because you can just be like, yo, listen. Like, I got a fight in a couple weeks. I can't be out there like that. You know, I'm waiting. I get paid after I fight. I don't really have the funds to be taking you out like that right now. Exactly. But if you want to slide through, man, then we're good. Yeah, all right. So it's a different world.
But as for the actual science, which is the reason why I think most people are looking for answers from, is there's no scientific data that shows that having intercourse makes your legs weak before a fight.
Listen, sperm regenerates itself in 24 hours, and you know the drop in testosterone that would be related to, again, I probably would pump your testosterone up, the act itself, and there might be like a little bit calm down afterwards, but no, I don't think that warriors of old were abstaining from sex because it hurt their testosterone. If anything, I think the warriors got laid
who
more
started
than everybody.
This? Who started What's this that? Rumor? Who started this rumor?
Coaches telling their guys to stop going out and chasing skirts. That's 100% what it's about. It's don't go out. You shouldn't be going out. You should be locked in. You got to be like a monk. Monks don't abstain from sex. So do you. I think it's more a myth created by a hard-nosed trainer, custom model, telling Mike Tyson you can't go chase girls and get girls pregnant and get arrested for all types of things. But.
So you're saying Tyson shouldn't have been flying from Japan to Hawaii on fight week against Buster Douglas chasing women? Because I heard that. That's almost confirmed.
We know how that turned out. So yeah.
That's a rumor that I feel like a lot of fighters are fighters are crazy. You guys are nuts. So like,
I've heard from our Hall of Famer famed coach Freddie Roach about one of his recent charges that was betting his girlfriend all night the night before one of his big fights. He did not perform well. I'll put it that way.
Betting his girlfriend. What do you mean? Oh, betting. BEDD.
bedding, B-E-D-D-I-N-G, bedding his girlfriend all day and all night prior to the actual fight. Didn't work out for him.
All right, so myth busted number one. There's nothing out there that says that having sex will ruin your performance in the ring. It will actually help you, says Chris Algieri, but it's a personal preference for some fighters. It makes you meaner, and it makes you disciplined. Don't give in type of mentality. So maybe it's more psychological than it is physical.
Myth. I think it's more psychological than physical, yes.
Love, yeah, perfect. Myth number two, you have to take the belt from the champion.
I fucking hate this one. This is bullshit. This is not the way the sport is scored. It is objective. And if you think about the way judges are supposed to score, they're supposed to score every round as if it was an individual contest, in which case you should have not any idea about who the champion is. Because in that round, nobody's a champion. Who won the round? That's it. It's objective scoring. It's a point system. It should not have to do with who's defending what and who the profile of that fighter is. Granted, I understand that judges are human and they can be swayed by the profile of a fighter. You have a guy who's been knocked out in all of his biggest fights, and then he's fighting a guy who's a big puncher. You're going to kind of look at every punch that guy, the other guy lands, the puncher maybe having more of an effect. I get that. You shouldn't, but that's how you might look at it based on what you've observed and what you've heard. But in terms of one guy being the champion and the other guy not, you have to take the title from the champion. For one, that shouldn't be the case because, again, it's objective scoring. But two, that hasn't been the case. And we've seen that many times where, you know, guys are getting, quote unquote, robbed of their titles. It happens all the time. And a lot of times, I think it's more the guy who's the profile, who's the bigger name, gets the benefit of that more than the guy who has the belt.
Yeah, I mean, I think of like Pacquiao, he got robbed numerous times. Bradley,
yeah.
Jeff Horn. And when you say like a judge goes into a fight with a preconceived notion, a guy that got knocked out in his last fight, this doesn't necessarily pertain to being taking the belt from the champion. It has more to do with judging. You know, Tom Schreck wrote that article on Boxing Scene where he said that it's crept into his mind and it's crept into some judges. Like, he knows that the other judges must talk about it, or it's something that's a problem in the judging community. Going into a fight with preconceived notions. A preconceived notion is not even a preconceived notion, but the champ having to take the title from him. No, like you shouldn't enter a fight as the underdog or as the challenger. Like your fight with Ruslan, you should not have entered that fight down 3-0 because he's.
Well, I gave him 3 rounds in the first round anyway, but.
Yeah, you did. To pretend you did that yourself.
I started 3 rounds on the whole after the first round, but yeah.
Yeah, you had to make that a little bit harder for you. For yourself, but you should not head into a championship fight as the challenger going up against a champion down 2 or 3 rounds. No, that's not how the sport works. Like you said, it's 10-9 round. Every round, it's fighter A versus fighter B, not Floyd Mayweather, oh my God, versus a guy in Adidas shorts and tennis shoes. It's 10-9 every round. So that's a myth that we hear it. You turn on a boxing telecast today, and you'll hear that. You won't hear me saying it. I know we won't hear you saying it on Pro Box. You won't hear me saying it on MVP. Like, there is no such thing as you have to take the belt from the champion. You have to win 7 rounds, or you have to have a better scorecard than your opponent. And that's how at least it
really
should be.
I don't ever really hear that from boxing people.
What's that?
I don't ever really hear that from boxing people. I hear it from, like, a guy in the gym. Fans. He's like, yeah, but you gotta take it from the champion. I'm like, no, you don't. You gotta take it from anybody. It doesn't matter if it's a champion or not.
Yeah. Moving on. Myth number three. Professional fighters have to register their hands as lethal weapons. I want this one to be true because it sounds so cool.
It is not. It is not true. The issue comes up here is that if you do get into a fight and you use what is considered excessive force, and I don't know how you actually figure that out, but essentially if you get sued civilly on top of a criminal situation, they can say that you as a trained fighter have distinct advantages and you took advantage and you used those advantages over an opponent or over someone that wasn't on your level. But listen, sometimes it's true. If you beat a guy up mercilessly who has no business, you know, putting his hands up with you and he just made a mistake and then you pound him and curb stomp him, you know, it becomes a lot more dangerous. But it's one of those things where this is an absolute myth. Your hands are not registered. Anyone who ever says that probably says they're 99-0 in street fights, which also is never true.
Never lost.
Never. I'm 99-0 in underground fight. underground fights. Lost. Oh, golden gloves? No. Underground. Bar fights, mostly.
Real fights.
Real fights, you know, like the ones that matter. But yeah, no, that this is an absolute myth.
It's one of the cooler rumors, and I think that U.S. boxers should keep this alive. I think we should keep this one going. And like, yeah, it's like you talk
to
a girl.
Let's make a meme where it just says, boom, boom.
Yeah, you're at a bar. You're talking to a girl, and it's like, oh, I hope a fight doesn't break out tonight because I technically can't fight. My hands are
Don't worry, you're good.
Telling a girl your hands are registered lethal weapons is
if that was
very
the case, Joe Schilling would be in prison for a very long time because he knocks guys on bars on YouTube.
I feel like
regularly.
Yeah, if you like step on his foot the wrong way, the bartender gives him the wrong drink, you're getting clocked by Joe Schilling.
You're getting iced on camera.
Yeah, I mean, McGregor would be kind of fucked because he like beat up like an old
He's
guy.
He's punched a few old men recently.
It kind of makes sense. Like, I get why this one has legs and like we're still talking about it in 2025 because, you know, you guys are trained assassins. You are trained to fight. It's literally what you do all day long. So you could mess a dude up at a bar. Like, you could technically look at your hands as weapons. And you are a lot more trained than Joe Schmo, who like has been in a few bar fights, played football in high school. So I can kind of understand how this one has the legs that it has. And like, you can kind of explain.
Everything you said is right. Everything you said is absolutely true. There are weapons. You're a dangerous weapon, but you're not ever, there's nowhere where you're registered as a quote unquote rep weapon. But man, yeah, that is a really cool myth.
Like true. Like if you were to assault someone, you would get sued no matter what, boxer or not. Like you wouldn't get more sued. It wouldn't be like some more years added onto the potential jail
yes,
time.
It could be. No, actually it could be. Yes.
So that's a whole different argument then.
Yeah. No, if it wouldn't be based on there being a legal certification, but just like I opened it with, I said, if you use excessive force, there is a case where your attorney could say like, listen, this guy took full advantage of him having this trained skill and hurt my client much more than was necessary in order to just quote unquote win the fight or settle the dispute. So yeah, you can get sued big time for that.
Good lawyer would do that.
Yeah, and they're out there.
Shout out my buddy Mike Della, great lawyer here on Long Island, personal injury lawyer. Let's see.
Number if I go out this weekend.
Yeah, that was another thing too. Like, how many times you're at a bar and then like, oh, hey, yeah, pretty boy, you heard you're a fighter. You'll fight me.
Countless times. I mean, dude, I'm from Huntington. Annoying. Huntington, Long Island. People don't understand. Like, people who aren't from Long Island don't understand, like, Long Island's fights. Like, we get the street fights
culture.
A lot. Yeah, Huntington especially, and because it's a bar town. It's per capita, it's one of the densest bar areas there are. And there's a lot of fighting on in Huntington, Long Island. So I grew up there, you know, being underage in those bars quite a bit and had to throw some hands based on exactly what you just said. Oh, you're the fighter guy? You don't look like much of a fighter.
Or your boys get into a fight, bring in the ringer, Algeri. It's like bring
all my
in
boys
like
can
a,
fight.
Like a...
So we were wrestlers. Wrestlers are martial artists, so we can fight. So
or even like the fighter, Mickey Ward, got into remember that he got into that bar fight and the police officer broke his hand.
Paid dearly for that one. Broke his hand on purpose.
So it's a very common thing here with fighters. They're crazy people. They like to hang out at bars, like to chase women. As our first myth, they like to get into fights. So there's a lot of things outside of the ring.
This is painting a very interesting picture of what fighters are like.
Am I wrong?
Outside of the ring. No, you're not wrong at all.
I've met a lot of gentlemen. Believe me, I met a lot of cool dudes. I met a lot of guys that my dad said, do not go even near them. Like, as a kid, I got fights. Like, I mean, yeah. Turo Gotti was my favorite fighter growing up because I've heard the stories. And this is like pre-internet, so Right. Everything about Gotti was word of mouth. And I thought that was cool because this is pre-internet. So my dad telling stories, Lou DiBella telling me stories, Pat Lynch telling me stories, like that made him so much cooler because he did. Myth one and myth three are Ettore Gotti's life.
Yeah, I hung out with Arturo and Vinny Pazienza in the same night.
Bro,
in Atlantic City.
How did you live? How did you live to hear it? To
live
talk
to tell
about
the it? Tale? Yeah, it was a very interesting night. Those are two of the biggest party animals in recent history.
Yeah, they're up there. Speaking of party animals, have you watched this Charlie Sheen documentary on Netflix?
No, the guys at the gym were just talking about it, so that might be on the docket for tonight.
So I just watched it. I just got done with it. It's pretty good. I mean, we know his life at this point. Like, there was no one more famous at different stints. No one more famous for like
Tiger
when
one.
He did. Right. There's no one more famous when he did Platoon and Major League and Wall Street. And then there was no one more famous when he went on that like drug run where he was just famous for doing drug. Tiger Blood winning. He took over the world. But while watching that, I couldn't help but think, like, man, for someone that did so much crack and so much drugs, he has an unbelievable memory because he was telling stories to the very detailed stories of, like, random nights, like a Tuesday night in Palm Springs, like picking up a girl who was in – like, it was crazy. The dude's recall is insane, but what a life. Well, like a fighter.
Two things. Recall, I mean, he's an actor. You got to memorize your lines. And me, I think now I'm working on a set right now.
As an actor yourself.
I'm not an actor. No, I'm working with actors, and I'll tell you, these guys, their ability to remember and memorize choreography very, very quickly is extremely impressive.
Wow, good point.
Two, actors are absolute liars. They're professional liars. They're really good at it. That's what they do for a living. So he could be telling you this story about that random Tuesday night in Palm Springs with Veronica that really just didn't happen. He just made that shit up, and he sold you on it because he's a very good actor.
Yeah, he's very good. He won me over a few times. Like, I was feeling like sympathy for like a crackhead that like probably was a horrible time.
A lot of bad things.
But a lot of really bad. It just reminded me of, like, once again, I'm not trying to paint this picture as fighters being horrible, but it kind of reminded me of a lot of our favorite fighters. Like, you rise up, you get into drugs or distractions, you have pitfalls, you come back, and now you're sober, and now you're on the right track. Not just boxers, just athletes in general, anyone with fame. So, yeah, I would go check that out. Where are we here? Okay, this is a controversial one, but it is a myth out there. Mike Tyson is a top 10 all-time heavyweight. Myth?
This is more of an opinion, less than that. Right? Mm. But definitely not my
top. Well, it's a myth in terms of, like, he's the most feared. Baddest guy on the planet is kind of, okay, like, in that myth.
I get it.
In that mythical factor. I actually talked to Tyson once, and I said, if there's ever one fighter you would want to fight, and he said, I fought everyone. I said, what about a mythical creature? He goes, I am a mythical creature. That's what he said to me, and I was like, all right, interview over. So, like, there is that mythical factor. I was like, yeah, thank you. 3 million views. Like, there is a mythical thing about Tyson, and you get caught up in the Tyson hysteria, and if you talk to, like, a random guy, like, maybe you're, like, you know, at the bar or somewhere, but, yo, Mike Tyson is an all. He's the top. He's on the Mount Rushmore of heavyweights. But he's really, I don't think he is, which is not a slight. It's more about the fact that the sport's been around for 100 years. He was certainly on a trajectory. We're talking, like, youngest heavyweight champion of all time. What do you have, like 10 or 11 title defenses in a really short amount of time? He had one of the biggest fights ever, and he won it in 91 seconds. But he also can't knock the fact that he lost pretty much every big fight he was ever in.
Had zero longevity. Once he got to the top, but yeah, no. So you won me over on whether this is a myth or not, because it is a myth. Because so many people do say, like, oh yeah, no, obviously Tyson's like the best, right? Like, no, not even close. And I don't think there is an argument for him in the top 10 at all. And I don't think any true boxing pundit would argue that with any veracity at all. I don't think he would. I don't think he is a boxing historian. I don't think he would even put himself on there if he's being really honest. He doesn't belong.
I have to ask him that.
I don't think he belongs in the top 10.
Well, he's a very humble guy.
He's a very humble guy, but he also is a very knowledgeable boxing historian. Mm-hmm. And he has a lot of respect for fighters from the old days. Can I see him putting himself in front of those guys? I don't.
I think he's like top 20, like top 15. Like, there's no doubt this guy, like, in his prime, before everything, once again, before maybe myth one and myth three, and him going out, him chasing girls, him doing drugs. Like, when he was pure... with Customato, with Kevin Rooney, with his two managers, I forgot their names. He could have been top. He was on his way. Like, there's no doubt about it. You cannot knock the first, like, 5 or 7 years of his career, but you have to look at it as a full career. The losses to Holyfield, the loss to Lennox Lewis, The loss to Buster Douglas, which was the beginning of the downfall.
Two losses and, to Evander.
Right. Two losses to Holyfield.
Evander beat his ass that first fight before the bite. The bite was in the second fight. Evander. Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, he was already too old for that. But like Evander was like, that was like a dangerous, scary Mike Tyson. Evander whipped his ass. That was not.
Why do you think he bit his ear? Because he was frustrated.
Well, that was the second fight. But the first fight, he tuned him up. I don't think he ever beats Lennox either. I don't care what phase he was in.
Well, yeah, that's the beauty of it. Like 85 Tyson, could 85 Tyson beat 97 Lennox Lewis?
No, I don't think he ever beats him.
Yeah,
Lennox had his number. He was a big guy who wasn't afraid of him. He was a big guy who wasn't afraid of him.
Yeah. If you didn't show any fear and if you bullied Tyson.
Yeah.
He cowered. Like Buster Douglas was the first one to be like, I'm gonna stand and trade with this guy. Also, perfect build, perfect game plan. Mother passed away, had all sorts of inspirations.
Yeah.
Right. But like you bully Tyson that and you could beat him. And that showed towards the end of his career when he started adding on more losses. He's got a loss.
Ali talks him into a corner before the fight even starts. He's beaten before he even enters the ring. Alexander Usyk, no way Mike could beat him.
I would love to see that.
No way could Mike beat him. He wouldn't even hit him. I don't know. I mean, listen, I love Mike, but in terms of historic heavyweights, I can't have him anywhere near top 10.
If you do like a Mount Rushmore of like meaningful fighters of the last 25 years,
oh, absolutely.
I think
he's one of the most meaningful
like that,
human
like,
beings on the planet. Like he's the most recognizable man on the planet, literally.
What he's done for the sport, I mean, he's still part of the sport. He's still freaking fighting, number one. Number two, like he's attending fights. He's very much part of the culture and he's very much involved. So, and in terms of him, what he meant for the sport, and 100% put him in like top 10 most important people in boxing.
Most influential? Yes.
He's up there. Up there where,
in terms of influential, like I would put him up there with Ali. Ali, who is absolutely the most influential person, boxer of all time, and athlete probably of all time. Mike's right up there with that in terms of influence, for sure. No question.
100%. Ali is in a whole other stratosphere. But the way that Tyson is revered and the way that people lost their minds, we got to see it like again for the Roy Jones buildup and again for the Jake Paul buildup and fight night. And just the way I've been in rooms with him. People legit just stopped dead in their tracks and he's just revered. Like, it's wild. But in terms of
he's got a crazy aura.
Insane. It's like you stop. You're right. He's one of the top 10 most recognizable faces with the tattoo. This next one is interesting, and Adam Abramowitz, who is a writer for The Ring and some other, he has his own site, Saturday Night Boxing, very good boxing mind, added this one, and he thinks this is a myth, and I disagree. Styles make fights. I think that's one of the most truest sayings in boxing.
Yeah, that's not a myth at all. Listen, I'm on Pro Box. We make great fights with guys that, you know, wouldn't be on anyone's list anywhere. Guys who fall through the cracks. I mean, ESPN Friday Night Fights was built on that, was built on matchmaking, creating good fights. Styles make fights because you can take two really good fighters that just will not match up well and make for an entertaining fight. And you can take two subpar guys and you can make a great fight. Listen, I used to like watching tough man contests. They both sucked, but guess what? They made for good fights. It was entertaining. So styles absolutely make fights.
I think what he was trying to say that like you could fight one way, one fight, and then a rematch. Boxer versus puncher in fight one, which is how you probably make a ton of fights. It's one of the easiest recipes, not easiest, but that's what matchmakers look for. Like this Pro Box matchmaker, the prospects matchmaker that I work with, you look for a guy that's going to come forward and you try to put him in there with a guy that's going to counterpunch, or you look for a tough, durable, rugged guy, usually from Mexico, who has maybe one knockout loss in 30 fights against an up-and-coming puncher. But I think what he was trying to say, Abramowitz, was if you fight one and you fight one way and you make an adjustment, then you can throw styles out. Styles make fights out the window. I'm trying to find his response. But do you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that I think it depends on where you look at it. I think Abraham is who knows the sport really well. I think he's looking at it a little differently than the traditional saying of what styles make fights kind of. Because I think of it from a matchmaker's point of view. He seems to be talking about it as in terms of fighters and the way that they choose to fight any certain fight. Because if you look at like a great example is Triple G and Canelo. The first fight, Canelo fought one style. The second fight, he fought a different style. Both fights were really good. The third fight was a bit of a dud because Triple G was just 165 years old. But the first two were really good, even though Canelo employed two different styles.
Yeah, he said, I found it. Some guy goes, that's not a myth, LOL. He said, it is. Why do so many rematches play out differently in terms of the type of the fight? Would that be more about adjustments?
Yeah, it's about adjustments. It's about also from a fighter standpoint, like when you know a guy, it's very different.
Styles make fights. I think there's a lot of crappy boxing cliches out there, but I believe that styles make fights is one of the truest forms, and I use it constantly on Twitter or talking with boxing fans because just, for instance, look at Shakur versus Teofimo, which I said I don't think it was going to be the most stylistic or aesthetically pleasing fight because their styles clash. They fight the same way. Not technically this 100% the same, but they throw less than 40 punches. They're both counter punchers. They both fight off the back foot. Shakur is defense-minded. Teofimo's best performances come against guys that push the tempo. Shakur is not going to push the tempo. Everything I just named is styles. So that doesn't make any sense. Like Matias versus Teofimo, styles make fights. Banger. Mm-hmm. Zepeda versus Shakur.
Potentially so. All right, now I'm seeing where we're because like you could have a guy who goes out there. Because listen, if Teofimo fights Matias, yeah, on paper you're like, oh, that's a banger. But what if Tio goes out there and he fights? I don't want to say safety first, but he fights much more of a boxing style. He chooses not to employ, kind of his catch and shoot, stay in the pocket kind of thing, where he just stays on the outside and uses that jab, kind of like the way he fought Barbosa, and he makes it kind of a boring fight. But he wins. He wins 11 and a half out of 12 rounds. I'm coming around to this, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's a myth. Styles do make fights. Whether you employ one style to make the fight exciting, whether you employ that style in order to be victorious, whether you employ that style so you don't get hit too much or make it. So the style chosen for the fight makes the fight, whether the fight's good, bad, or in between.
I also believe in, you see this in baseball, it's 162 game schedule. So you are what your record is. Your average is pretty much what your average is. There's a few anomalies out there. A guy has a career year. Maybe it's a contract year. Maybe he's on PEDs. But for the most part, you know that Aaron Judge is going to hit 300 and around 40 homers. Same thing with boxers. Like I'm almost certain how Shakur is going to come out and fight in a fight. I'm almost certain how Chris Algieri would come out and fight for the most part of his career. Like you're going to be a slick, you're going to jab. You're going to be in and out. You're going to throw a lot of punches. And you're going to make your opponent miss. And you make your opponent miss. I think we can say that when Styles makes fights, we're thinking about these guys as their career norms. And I have the numbers. I have the database. I got the numbers. So I know.
I got the database
and you don't. No, the thing is I
follow trends. Like, I know what I'm looking at.
Yeah, numbers are cool like that. Like boxing has numbers. Thanks to Bob Canobio. Good shout out, Bob. Like boxing, well,
you
know, has
you guys
numbers
are boxing. I'm sorry, boxing. But you guys are baseball people. Baseball is all numbers and stats. And your dad being the genius that baseball. He is, your dad being the genius that he is, figured out a way to put stats and numbers to boxing. And now we have stats. We got copy box, and that's.
I would say it's not the end all be all. I always say, listen, use the numbers and use your eyes. Use both. And Bob has said that since day one. Hey, this is not meant to score a fight. That's going to be another myth right here. I'll introduce it. Wasn't even on the docket. CompuBox, if you land more punches, you win the fight. CompuBox said I hate when people say, well, CompuBox said he won the fight. That doesn't even make sense.
CompuBox doesn't do that.
We don't score fights. We don't score fights. It's simply there to be assist you. It's simply there to be a helpful guide for broadcasters. Like I know you guys use the stats on ProBox. I know I use them now. As a broadcaster, it's great to see trends.
I like them because when they confirm what I'm saying, they're great, and yes. I'll bring them up. And when they don't,
Yeah, just like your friend Paulie, when he used the step punch stats to get a rematch with Juan Diaz.
Yeah, there you go.
And then he trashed him.
Hated it for Broner.
Hated it for Pablo Cesar Cano.
Cano. Yep.
Because Jim Grace had to stir the pot. Jim Gray comes up to us after the fight, as the scorecards are being tabulated.
Jim Gray's good at that.
Oh, bro, this was Clay. I watched this all play out right in front of my eyes, sitting ringside. So Paulie fights Cano. First fight in the history of Barclays Center, or first fight night. I thought he lost. It was a tough fight. I thought he lost the decision. So they're doing the scorecards, and we could hear in our earpiece like who won the fight, and it was Malignaggi. And we're like, wow. So we look at the punch stats. I think Cano outlanded him by close to 100 punches. And Jim Gray, being the veteran that he is,
wow,
pretty sure it was about 100 punch difference.
And Paulie said he hit really hard too.
I know. And, Jim Gray, being the Hall of Famer that he is and Hall of Fame shitster, comes over to us. Hey, Bob, what are the punch stats? We give him the note. He looks at it, goes into the ring. I'm like, oh, shit. It's about to go down.
Here we go.
I got all the information.
Especially with Paulie, who's not staying tight-lipped at all.
They read it out. Paulie Malignaggi wins. Crowd starts booing his own people. You know, and like that's the thing about boxing fans. If they don't believe a guy won, they'll boo a decision, even if it's in a hometown. Maybe there was a lot of Cano fans there. I don't know for sure. And they're booing throughout Paulie's post-fight interview. He's getting pissed off. And that's when Gray gives him the stat. Well, CompuBox had you outland, like you got outlanded by 100 punches. So how do you think you won? Fuck them. They need lens crafters. They suck. And then he went on like a 3-week tirade against us, like going on any radio show he could possibly do. And it was classic Paulie. But we've made up since then. We're friends now. Long story
short. Yeah, you guys are cool. He still doesn't like CompuBox that much, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's fine. Not everyone likes it. It's a controversial tool. That's how you stick around for 40 years. You got to be controversial. It's a controversial sport. It's just a subjective sport.
Of course.
It's a freaking Wild West. I just had a Tank Davis, Jake Paul press conference yesterday. It's a wild sport, and it's not going anywhere. It'll be another one of our – let's just go with that one then. Myth number here, boxing is dead or boxing is dying. I think that's a big myth, Chris. I think you agree.
Huge myth. Boxing – first of all, boxing is doing fantastic. There's so much more money being made. There's so many more fights being made. There's so many more fights happening. There's so many more ways to view fights. I mean, if I could watch this much boxing when I was coming up, I would have been a much happier young man, and I probably would have been less time in the streets running around. But I love watching fights. I can watch fights all day.
Back to myth number one. You wouldn't have weakened legs. You would have been watching boxing, not chasing girls.
I might have been a better fighter. But let's put this. Who said that? Nothing can kill boxing.
Dude, yes, Larry Merchant, I believe. Anyone that said something like that, you just say Larry Merchant said it, and you're probably right. I'm pretty sure he said that.
He said everything.
But like, Chris, you're like me. Everyone identifies you with boxing. Everyone, for the most part, people identify me with boxing. And they come up to me and they say, oh, how's boxing doing? Like, I used to love watching it in the 90s with my dad, but I don't watch it anymore. Like, oh, wow, boxing really fell off. And like, they don't understand. It's like kind of like offensive to say that to me. It's like, I look at boxing as like my life. And like, don't say it fell off. Like, you don't know anything about it. Like, I always be like, no, bro, it's a niche sport. It's like hockey. Like, we're still selling out arenas. It's a probably bigger overseas. Still, in the last couple of years, not as popular here because of Saudi. But it's not dead. And we brought up Larry Merchant. We also have something that Max Kellerman said before when Max was saying coherent things. He said a while back that... You put four. This is pre-shilling, Max. If you put four sports on the corner, like a baseball game, a flag football game, a hockey game, and a fight, where are all the people going to gravitate to?
Fight.
The fight, because it's a freak show element. It's fighting. It's hand-to-hand combat. On November 14th, when Jake Paul steps into the ring with Tank, you could be so against that fight. You're gonna pop that on Netflix and be like, what does this look like? Like a 100-pound difference? Like a guy with experience fighting since he was 8 against a guy that's fighting for the last 5 years? Like fighting, that's like the lowest level. And right up until championship level, it's so intriguing. And that's why like they make movies about it still. That's why Canelo Crawford will get the eyeballs of casual fans, and you just want to feel like you're a part of it. Like, you know, I was around some guys that don't even watch boxing. They were like, I watch Canelo Crawford because you don't want to miss it. You know what I mean? It's not like a game. It's an event.
Well, that happened with Tyson and Roy Jones. I was like, this is a freak show, blah, blah, blah. No way I'm watching that. And then it was like that day, and I'm like, I think I'm gonna watch it. I bought the pay-per-view like right away.
Exactly. So
and I enjoyed it. Call me a freak. And I enjoyed it. So
maybe you'll enjoy Paul versus Tank?
No, because it's the size, it's the level. I don't know, dude.
Yeah. I was at the presser yesterday, New York presser. Tank just wasn't in the mood to talk. We chatted a little bit in the locker room before off camera. He said he's feeling good. I talked to his trainer, Kenny. Cool dude. Talked to him for a while about boxing and a lot of things. Very cool guy. Love to have him on the show. I think everyone knows. Great life. I think there was a Wire character based off of his life. He's awesome. But yeah, it was a different type of vibe in there for that. But I feel like a lot of people will tune in for the whole aspect of, like, now it has a winner and a loser. There's going to be a judge using 12-ounce gloves, which are obviously bigger than usual.
Yeah.
And, like,
that's another thing that makes me less interested. I'm like, we got two size difference. We got bigger gloves. It's an exhibition. You got guys that are just on very different levels that don't belong to be in the same ring together. It's just, there's too many things.
There's a lot of variables. I don't think it's geared towards hardcores. I think it's geared towards casual fans. I think it's geared towards just the general public. And just as I texted him, one of my buddies just texted me a picture of the two of them up on the stage. He goes, there's no way that Gervonta Davis can win this fight based off of the height difference. But that's what this fight is. It's Jake Paul is now fighting someone close in his age, but it's a guy that's 100 pounds less than him, 6 or 7 inches shorter, but has been fighting since he was 8. And that's this. There's some variables here that would, yeah. I don't know, man. I think a lot of people will tune in. And I wanted to ask Jake, I should have asked him this yesterday. I should have said, hey, bro, like, have you even, like, processed the idea that, like, Tank could just, like, kind of kick your ass? Like, that could very much happen. I would like to get his answer on that.
Yeah, I mean, and he'll probably, Jake's smart, and he'll have a smart answer to respond. Like, well, yeah, I'm taking it's a risky fight. This guy knocks people out. This guy's this. This guy's that. And then you're going to retort with, well, yeah, but he's also 100 pounds less than you. I don't care how big he is.
Even with the bigger gloves.
People are going to see this and be like, dude got beat up. Like, you should tell him. You should, like, essentially, this is ending your boxing career if you lose. You know that, right? Like,
I mean, how does Tank?
How does Tank?
No
one will take you seriously. I don't see Tank losing this.
It is an exhibition, so, like, you can. There could be some funny business. I'm not saying there's going to be funny business.
I could see Tank not knocking him out. But, like, I don't know, dude. This came up in the gym today with, not today, but this week, or as it's been a consistent thing in the gym, actually. People are bringing up, like, but the size difference, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, exactly. I'm like, you don't live in gyms. I can't count on two hands how many times I've seen way smaller guys beat the ever loving shit out of guys who are way bigger than them. I mean, I'm talking 100 pounds. I sparred heavyweights. I beat up heavyweights, beat up light heavyweights. Everybody in gyms who spends time in boxing gyms have seen high-level, much smaller guys beat up way bigger guys. I've seen 105-pounders beat up welterweights. It's not a crazy thing.
Those are heavyweights. And the bigger guys that you're listing are guys that have been fighting for a really long time. Jake's been fighting for 5 years. That's why I'm starting to think that if Tank... I don't know with Tank. He's such a wild card, but I know he's taking this training camp way different. He set it up. He didn't say a lot up on the stage, but he said, this is the first training camp I can have fun, a.k.a. like, what are you doing? Are you training 3 days a week? Are you putting in cut weight? Right?
If he fights for real, he can't lose. That's my stance.
Well, even if he trains half-ass, he can't lose, in my opinion. And that's
Well, he can because you know how he loses? The fight's like competitive. Like, if Jake Paul's in the fight, Tank loses and Jake wins.
Yeah, win for Tank.
Correct. If Tank doesn't completely dominate him or stop him, it's a loss other than the bank account.
And Jake can't come in any higher than 195.
That is an insane number. That is an insane number. But also, he cuts weight. So what does that mean? Does that mean step in the ring at 195? What is that? Or is that the weigh-in?
It's probably the weigh-in on Friday morning or Thursday.
Okay, cool. So he's going to be 218 when he steps in the ring.
That's exactly what Ryan Garcia said. I asked Jake about Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia said boxing's turning into the WWE. So I wanted to get Jake's thoughts on that. Naturally, Jake gave a great answer. You know, Ryan Garcia must be jealous, blah, blah, blah. Ryan Garcia answers right before we sat down and recorded this, like, and said, okay, yeah, 195, but you're going to, that means following day, you're going to be 215. And yeah. Tank, I'm pretty sure I heard.
Will be a fleshy 143.
Yeah, he's 150 tops.
Tops. And he's going to be, he looked chubby in the face at the press conference.
He was a little chubby yesterday. Yeah, I saw him.
Yeah, he's going to be a fleshy, welterweight at best.
Well, that's kind of the other myth I have here, and I think we figured this one out, and Terrence Crawford kind of erased this one. The great bigger man always defeats the great smaller man. Myth.
We've seen it too many times where it didn't. When we're talking about greats, it doesn't have the effect that people think. And I'm going to go with Canelo Alvarez fighting Floyd Mayweather. That was the first one. Floyd came in 150. You know, I think the weight class was like 53 or 54, whatever. Regardless, Canelo was 168 pounds by the time they got in the ring. Didn't matter. Then you've got
Pacquiao De La Hoya.
Pacquiao De La Hoya jumping up two weight classes, much smaller man. Pacquiao against Margarito, much smaller man.
Didn't Mosley jump up?
Mosley jumped up to fight De La Hoya. Yeah, I think he had one or two fights, but much lower level, not a level of like a De La Hoya. He basically skipped 140. I think he had one or two fights at 140 and then like went to 47 to fight De La Hoya. And even you know, where this all came from, the original pound-for-pound Sugar Ray Robinson was beating the crap out of Joey Maxim, yeah. And was beating the crap out of him before heat exhaustion in the 14th round ended his run for the light heavyweight title. In a 12-rounder, he won that fight running away with it. But it was a 15-rounder. Also, if it was inside a 15-rounder, he wins the fight handily, easily. So, I think it's been proven time and time again at the greatness level, at the highest level, that the size doesn't matter. Even Sugar Ray Leonard coming up and fighting Marvin Hagler when they fought. You know, like he came off of a long layoff, a torn retina, smaller man. Didn't matter. When he fought Donnie Lalonde at 175. Sugar Ray Leonard is a light heavyweight champion. He went to 175 and knocked out Donnie Lalonde. That's crazy.
People forget that.
Donnie Lalonde could fight.
And that fight was, I was watching a WrestleMania documentary. I love documentaries, if you haven't known. Vince McMahon and WWE, they promoted that fight. Cross-promotion, really? Which we're seeing now. Yeah, WrestleMania. Lalonde and Sugar Ray Leonard showed up to like WrestleMania 7. Brilliant idea in terms of cross-marketing, cross-promoting. And we see that.
Brilliant guy.
But yeah, during the fight week for Canelo Crawford, you know, Crawford did say this. He said, who came up with this thing? Because I think Max regurgitated it. You know, the great bigger man always beats the great smaller man. And Crawford was like, well, who said that? Like, why? Like, who started this? It is a myth. That's one of those regurgitated
old cliches turn into myths.
That's what we're learning today. So that's like, that one's really relevant today. It's relevant with the Canelo fight. It's going to be relevant, I think, with this Tank thing. I think we're going to see Tank kind of have fun in there with Dave, with Jake. I don't see how else. Triangle theory is a myth in boxing that I think should be blown up, where fighter A and fighter B, like in terms of like, for instance, Lomachenko versus Mikey Garcia, they never fought. But Mikey Garcia beat Salido. Salido beat Lomachenko. Therefore, Mikey Garcia beats Lomachenko.
Yeah, that's we call that boxing math. Boxing math doesn't work. Boxing math doesn't add up. That was a complete myth.
Let's go through some other ones.
That brings to life the other myth, or the non-myth, is that styles make fights. Triangle theory, boxing math doesn't work because styles make fights.
Styles make fights beats the triangle theory in a myth off. Get it?
Boom.
Gone. In the ring, head-to-head, Triangle Theory versus Boxing Myth. Tale of the tape. Boxing, Styles make fights. Power is the last thing to go.
It's true.
People think that's a myth.
Physicality, so physical strength is the last thing to go. If you look at powerlifters, you know, historically, or older guys, older gentlemen, man strength, quote unquote, mature, you know, muscle maturity, muscle density.
Still waiting for my man strength.
All those things. Yeah, you'll get there. You can grow a beard now. That's good. Thanks. That's a good start.
Thank you.
But that is the last thing to go. It's the reason why punchers can have longer careers. Look at George Foreman. You know, George Foreman could punch. He could really punch.
Or that's just a George thing.
Just a George thing. I don't think so because you look at punchers can have longer careers and punchers can fight in more weight classes because a puncher is a puncher. I don't care how much you weigh, you can punch. I've seen 122 pounders knock out welterweights in the gym. I've been hurt by guys who are 122 pounds in the gym sparring. If you can crack, you can crack. You just have that ability. Power is God-given. And if you have that, it doesn't really go away, man. It's a funny thing. It's a God gift to be able to put people to sleep, and that is the last thing to go too. If you have it.
I think there was another one too. A fan brought up like
That's a good myth, and I'll tell you right now. I don't
power. What
you can improve power. You can't teach power. You can't teach knockout power. You can improve on it though, but everyone has a potential. They have a ceiling.
I agree with that. I think. What comes to mind is the Charlo brothers. Like they weren't exactly punchers, but they were taught. This isn't like the number one, but this is what comes to mind for me. Like they were taught how to punch and sit down on shots. I hear about this all the time.
Sitting down on shots is a real thing.
Absolutely. Same thing as like baseball, like swing for the like launch angle in baseball. Now that's a big thing in the sport is none of these guys want to hit line drives or hit the ball on the ground. They're being taught now to hit everything in the air. Like my nephew, who's 18 and playing college baseball, they said, do not hit the ball on the ground. Hit everything in the air, like launch angle. So therefore, you could sit down. It's a technique. Everything's a technique. These are athletes. It's a technique. Some guys have God-given talent and God-given abilities, of course. But if you can enhance a guy who has decent abilities to sit down on his shots, then, you know, that's the difference. That's what makes sports what they are. Ring generalship, no one knows what it is, but apparently it's the number one scoring criteria in all clean, effective punches. But ring generalship is like, what is ring generalship? Do we know?
Yeah, we do. And ring generalship is really important. It's the ability to control the space in the ring and make the fight look like the way that you want it to. If you're a ring general, that means you're in control and that you are a general, right? You're the dominant one in the ring, and the fight is going to be fought where I want. When I want, how fast I want it to be fought at. That's what a ring general is. And that's why it's so important when it comes to scoring, because it shows who's in control of the space within the ropes.
Okay, but to counter that, can you win a fight off your back foot? Should you be rewarded for fighting backwards? Like, that's how I want to fight. That's how I win fights. I've seen enough fights and I've been around enough judges that I feel like the one thing I have a good grasp on for judges is they like the fighter that's coming forward and they will give benefit of the doubt, they will give a close round to the guy that's bringing, quote unquote, bringing the fight, not the guy who's landing crafty shots off his back foot.
Yeah, it's effective aggression is the actual scoring criteria, not aggression. So if you can be aggressive and getting tagged with jabs and counters the whole way forward, then you're not effective and you're getting hit. So it's twofold. You're being aggressive, but you've given defense is another scoring criteria. If you're being aggressive and not effective, not only are you not being effectively aggressive, you're also a bad defense. So you should get two derogatory points in terms of scoring. And then the other guy's being a ring general and he's making you fight his fight and walk into punches. So it's another derogatory against you in terms of scoring. And he's probably landing the cleaner, more effective punches anyway, even if he's fighting off his back foot. So literally every scoring criteria goes out the window. But just like you said, a lot of really dumb judges will get the sense that the guy coming forward is winning the fight, especially if it's close. And if he is landing some shots, but maybe not landing as many. I think it's a lazy way to score.
It is. And when I think of ring generalship, I think of someone that's coming forward and controlling like Canelo. But ring generalship could also mean a guy fighting off his back foot, like how you fought.
Yeah, I fought off my back foot, but I was in control of the space. Yeah, my second half of my career, I was very aggressive. But first half, yeah, I fought off my back foot. I jabbed, but I also, I moved laterally a lot, but I tied guys up. I also threw a ton of punches. It's really hard to score. It was really hard to, if you really were watching my face, it was really hard to score against me. I threw so many punches. And if you like, if you like a volume guy, if you like an effective guy, if you like guys who throw combinations, I think that's such a lost art. Nobody throws combinations anymore. Everyone's afraid to get countered and guys hit, they're afraid to get hit. I threw a ton of punches. There's lots of opportunities for guys to counter me and hit me in between, but you know, I had fast hands and I threw smart punches at the right time.
Last one. I hate this one. I hate it so much. Look at his face. It's all marked up. He had to have lost the fight.
Guys, dude, everyone's built different.
Dude. Everyone's built different.
Yeah. Also, so here, this is real Inside Boxing Live. Different gloves make different marks. Anybody ever thought about that? Reyes gloves, dude, they have so many edges. Even when I was blocking punches, I was getting bruised and cut up and scraped. The gloves have the leather is weird. It's really hard and it has edges all over the glove. So you have these points that are just hitting you. And it doesn't even matter the padding. I'm talking about the outside, the actual leather of it. It's very thick, made in Mexico. Echo in Mexico. It's really good, high quality. It's not smooth like that rival glove that's in your hand right there. There's a lot of edges on those gloves. If you look at them, you can see the seams. You can see that stuff leaves marks. Just because there's marks does not mean you're getting hit cleaner. And people's skin are different. You know, some African fighters, man. Some African fighters, their faces, they'll get hit with everything. There's not a single mark on them. And then you got some Irish guys that are literally bright red as they're walking to the ring because, you know, they're hitting themselves on the head on the way to the ring, and then they're red for the whole pigment. Night. Yeah.
Pigment, guys. So. Pigment. So I'm going to say it's pigment. I hate that discussion. I see it on Twitter a lot. It's like they show a picture of like his face, and it's like
– also headbutts, though. Headbutts are not scoring. Headbutts are not scoring. Headbutts cause so much damage in fights, even if they're not called. I've been headbutted so many times in fights where it gave me a black eye. It swelled my nose. It gave me a little cut. You know, also, if you break your nose, and especially if you're a white guy, you get two black eyes. It happened to me in the Tommy Coyle fight. I got my nose broken in the second round, and my face, and I wasn't getting hit that much throughout the fight. I was actually controlling that fight and on my way to a knockout, but my face fell apart because my nose was broken. I got hit with a left hook right in the point of my nose.
And you won.
And I felt it right away. I stopped him. And it was honestly, as tough as Tommy was, that was a fight that I felt in control the entire time. Other than when he rocked me in the second round. But yeah, my nose blew up and your eyes swell and you get two black eyes. So yeah, I'm really against this one. I know you are too from what you said. But there's just so many other factors. Guys with braids, they mess up your face more than guys who have short hair.
They rub it up against your face.
Yeah. Miguel Cotto, Paul Manaji told me about this. Miguel would have like a 3-day stubble on his shaved head because it would rip up your face and your skin and your forehead. It makes it uncomfortable. It leaves marks and it gives an impression that the punches are doing more damage.
Speaking of Paul, he never should have came into that one fight with the braids. They're flying everywhere.
No, braids are not a good look. I had trouble with braids when I fought with long hair as well.
No, I'm talking about but like
when you have long hair.
Fight, he had the hair flying all the place.
It was I think it was Philip Endu. I think it was Endu. Yeah. Philip Lovemore Endu. I don't know where I got Philip from.
Lovemore because Endu. Every time you get hit, the hair would pop up, and it would just be easier for the judges to see.
Yes,
and then it got all out of control. It was everywhere. Yeah, that's it. Those are some good myths. I feel like we busted a lot of them. We solidified some of them. I'm sure there's many more. It's just that's what buys a 200, 300-year sport. So there are so many myths that start, and they just gain steam, and it's up to us, Inside Boxing Live. To stop them dead in their tracks.
And for you guys to hear our thoughts. So you will be a more informed listener and watcher of The Sweet Science.
I hope everyone enjoyed a different type of episode. I'm heading out to Montreal to call a fight on Saturday night on DAZN. We got Kim Clavel, who is a very talented
she's good.
Canadian fighter. Very good. She's in the main event. Tam Tebow, Wanda Walton. We have a debuting heavyweight. Should be fun. Me, Corey Erdman, Nonito Donaire, Ariel Helwani on the call.
Hell
looking forward to Montreal. It's a good crew.
I got Pro Box on Saturday in Kissimmee, Orlando, Florida at the Osceola Heritage. Our last couple cars have been absolute bangers from top to bottom. This one will be no different. As per usual, we got Najee Lopez, who's a really, really promising light heavyweight who's butting into contention pretty soon. He's got a tough fight, fighting a guy who's got a lot of experience and a good punch, Kelvin Henderson. So good main event. Some good undercard fights, a lot of good evenly 50-50 matchups where there are no B-sides and there are no A-sides. Everybody fights their asses off on Pro Box.
Styles make fights, Pro Box.
Bingo.
We'll tell you that. We'll tell you that. All right, hope everyone enjoyed this episode. We'll be back next week with another. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourself. Keep your hands up. Stay out of those DMs. Boxing myths debunked. Good night.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on new window treatments at Blinds.com. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered to your door fast and free. With over 25 million windows covered and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love.
Shop up to 50% off site-wide plus a free professional measure during the President's Day Mega Sale. Last chance happening right now at Blinds.com. Terms apply.